Escape from faux Disney, Anglo-Islamic wake-up. According to a variety of reports, the out-of-place character behind the fake Disney in Argentina, Walt Disney Mundo S.A., and Higgins Warner was a con artist who took direction in the title of Sir Max Higgins. The principal of Higgins Warner Corp., a 38-year-old Jamaican national who goes by the unlikely name of Emile Maximilian St. Patrick Higgins, aka Sir Max Higgins, was sentenced to 10 months in prison at the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida on April 14, 1994 after pleading guilty to bank fraud, and he received an additional 6 months in prison on January 15, 1998 for violating the terms of his probation. Powerscammers.com. In a topical attention-grabbing press release, Max Higgins claimed that he had the support of $1 billion U.S. dollars from the Arabs, including a member of the Saudi royal family, Prince Al-Walid bin Talal. Based on the serious discrimination against the Arab world from the leadership of the Walt Disney Company of Orlando, Florida, in the U.S., Max Higgins welcomes all Arab investors to come and invest with Walt Disney Mundo S.A., Inc. A Walt Disney World that's not actually a Walt Disney World, Kings Island Central, December 21, 2007. Terrorism financing came into public interest after the terrorist attacks in the United States on September 11 in 2001. Concerns were raised that a made-up Disney in Argentina funded by Middle Eastern Arab sovereigns could prove to be problematic. Higgins was indicted for fraud again on September 13, 2002, this time at the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, where he was accused of illegally applying for an advance benefit of $50,000 from the U.S. government-funded September 11 Victim Compensation Fund of 2001 by falsely claiming that his father, whom he identified as Solomon Patrick Higgins, was an investment banker who died in the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center. According to the indictment, Higgins submitted a fraudulent British death certificate for his father when applying for the benefit, and it was alleged that Emile St. Patrick Higgins does not have a father named Solomon Patrick Higgins, and no such person died on September 11, 2001 as a result of the terrorist-related attacks in New York City. Offshore alert: investors scramble to recover up to US $1 billion as Caribbean forex scams collapse. KYC News, October 31, 2008. The docket sheet for the case shows that Higgins sought to summons then-U.S. President George Bush, then-CIA Director George Tenet, and former Panama President Manuel Noriega to testify on his behalf. Higgins pleaded not guilty and was acquitted on March 21, 2003 following a jury trial. According to the Wall Street Journal, he subsequently established Higgins Warner, which is one of the few current scams that is not based around forex trading but, instead, solicits its loans to fund purported sports and entertainment ventures, offering monthly returns of 20%. To subsidize his production ploy, Max Higgins entangled the retired soccer player Diego Maradona. Diego Maradona, World Cup veteran and international soccer superstar, teamed up with Higgins Warner Group, keen to find the next young international soccer superstar. The World Football Idol competition was established for talented male athletes ages 15 to 18, from both the U.S. and Canada. One winner from the U.S. and Canada would be chosen to compete in Argentina. Creator and president of World Football Idol, TM, Sir Max Higgins hopes that U.S. and Canadian competitions will be received with enthusiasm, given the U.S. and Canada's growing admiration for soccer. Diego Maradona's participation in Round 1 and 2 of the World Football Idol, TM, on July 28, proved that World Football Idol, TM, would no doubt spark the attention of young U.S. and Canadian athletes. World Cup veteran Diego Maradona seeks the next soccer superstar, PR Newswire, 2007. Maradona was plagued by cocaine addiction and his career came to an early end. In April 2004, he was admitted to intensive care in a Buenos Aires hospital. Doctors reported that Maradona had been diagnosed with a cocaine overdose. Max Higgins allegedly had a UK Sir ranking. Perhaps the pseudo-Disney con organizer was the new look of a Tavistock Group's Ratlin money trading scheme in South America since the mid-1940s. On January 8, 1999, Disney Productions announced a recall of the home video version of their 1977 animated feature The Rescuers because it contained an objectionable background image. That image was the photographic figure of a topless woman. As said by Snopes.com, unlike most rumors of risque words and visuals hidden in Disney's animated films, this one was clearly true, and the images in question were undeniably purposely inserted into the movie. Disney claimed that the images were not placed in the children's film by any of their animators but were included later during the post-production process. In The Little Mermaid, 1989, the minister consecrating a wedding ceremony apparently displays an erection. According to Snopes, the triangular bulge claimed to be an erection is actually the minister's knee sticking out from under the tunic. One of the promotional artwork castle spires in the background of the same film bears a likeness to a penis. The artist of the artwork said he didn't notice the similarity until a member of his youth church group heard about the controversy on talk radio and called him at his studio with the news. In Who Framed Roger Rabbit, 1988, for a few frames Jessica's underwear supposedly disappears, revealing her naked groin junction regions. Whether this coloration was intended to suggest nudity or was the result of a paint error is unknown. In the same animation, a brief scene reveals baby Herman extending his middle finger directly before he passes under an employee's dress. This scene can indeed be seen on the home video release and was clearly intentional. Disney's supporters said that animators have unadventurously amused themselves by slipping sporadic racy frames or other gags into their work. Since this seems mostly to occur in Disney films, and not in children's animations produced by other companies, there is growing concern that frames which flash on the screen too briefly to be detected by theater audiences are part of a Disney manipulative mind control agenda. An artist who painted a mural in the ballroom of Walt Disney World's Grand Floridian Resort claimed he drew one of the background figures as a Nazi. In the animated fantasy film Beauty and the Beast, 1991, the Beast supposedly displays a heart-shaped tattoo on his backside, an apparent keepsake of Aleister Crowley, the Great Beast. On May 15, 2014, former child actor and model Michael Egan filed civil suits charging X-Men director Bryan Singer and former Disney executive David Newman for the targeting and victimization of young boys in a series of pedophile parties. Over the last decade, dozens of Disney employees have been arrested for alleged sex offenses involving children. Directed by Randy Moore, Escape from Tomorrow, 2013, is the tale of Jim White, a middle-aged father of two. In this gloomy comedy, Jim is on a calm vacation with his family at Disney World. Even as his family frolics through the park and is rapt with the sights and sounds of Disney, Jim is hectic following two sexy teenage French girls he longs for. But soon he begins experiencing a surrealist nightmare of paranoid visions in the happiest place on earth. Is Jim losing his mind, or is the Disney park environment more threatening than any of us could have imagined? The Conspiracy Zone website frequently deals with the psychology and unconstitutional betrayal behind the Nazification of American children. Movie after movie has cleverly brought the occult into the warp and woof of American thought, all under the disguise of entertainment. In a commentary titled The Perverted Walt Disney Empire, it criticized people who were spiritually blind and implicated shocking details in connection with Disneyland. Disneyland has underground tunnels and underground entrances that even most employees don't know about. One victim of total mind control mentioned that a tunnel entrance was at the Matterhorn Mountain. The Matterhorn was opened by Walt and his good friend Richard Nixon, who rode in the first car down the mountain. Disney Productions has given the Illuminati the cover to bring together illusionists, magicians, and special effects artists without anyone being suspicious. Walt Disney Incorporated has teamed up with Los Alamos and Sandia Labs, two other groups which are heavily involved in mind control and people control, to develop body scans, branding, and access codes for the visitors to Disney's theme parks. Each of the Disney theme parks, such as Disneyland, Disney World, Euro Disney, etc., have vast underground facilities. Each theme facility also has a vast infrastructure underground in order to maintain it. The underground Areas contain wardrobe design and repair units, fitting rooms, restrooms, cafeterias, security units, computers, freight ramps, utility encasements, and large connecting tunnels. The underground areas also have human programming rooms. They have their own power plants and water systems and their own police force. The Disney company employs 71,000 people at several locations. People are coming and going 24 hours. At the Disney theme parks. It boils down to this: in order for the elite to maintain their privileged position of power, they are systemically keeping humanity developmentally arrested. From an elitist point of view, an efficient way to control the masses is to traumatize most of humanity. Trauma is known to arrest development, and this is their area of expertise. Scientists are working around the clock, for their elite masters, devising new and improved methods to traumatize the next enemy. By now we should know who the enemy really is. The perverted Walt Disney Empire, the Conspiracy Zone. A user's comment on the Conspiracy Zone website said that Disney is a cult. I had the incredible misfortune of working for them for a few months. I saw already crazy Disney people and then watched as others became progressively crazier and bought into the cult. They wanted our mail sent to them to be monitored, they wouldn't let you go to the bathroom, they beat people down until they cried, in a circle with one person in the middle, the target, then hugged them and said, "We are your family now." They are insane. When I got my revenge on them and took off, they tried to track me down and threaten me, and I said I'd already called the news, which I had, and they immediately left me alone. Wes Penra, writing for Illuminati News, said that a friend of his sent him this letter. "I have a friend who went to Disneyland in California, and he stepped behind some thick bushes to smoke a cigarette. He found a hatch in the middle of the area, which he opened, and saw a ladder going down into a room. He heard children crying down there. Someone came out of the building at this point and put a gun to his head, and he was arrested by security. At any rate, a series of events followed which resulted in him having to sign a document saying he saw and heard nothing, was mentally disturbed, or something of that sort, and was escorted out of the area in handcuffs surrounded by armed guards, then escorted out of the area in his car." A Pennsylvania woman recently alleged that a Disney worker dressed as Donald Duck grabbed her breast and molested her. Former Disney star Miley Cyrus performed topless in 2015 while wearing a strap-on penis. In 2015, an outbreak of measles started in Disneyland. In 2016, an alligator killed a 2-year-old boy at Disney World. Time said Disney workers were going homeless. There were Disney employees living on the street. Mark Elliott's 1999 book, Walt Disney, Hollywood's Dark Prince, was an unforgiving portrayal. Elliott's investigator Karen Douglas said that in 1940, Walt Disney became an undercover spy for the FBI. The New York Times recently reported that Disney's FBI file confirms Elliott's charge, a commie hunter as said by Tim Apollo. If the paperclip bankers carefully hid the sinister side of DARPA Disneyland, perhaps one of those human resources purportedly locked in an FBI underground room with a hatch may have been the true-to-life Uncle Walt. Soon after Walt Disney's death in 1966, a rumor was spread that he was cryogenically frozen and kept in a tank, under Disneyland's Pirates of the Caribbean ride, so when they found a cure for his cancer they could bring him back to life. Contrary to popular belief, his family confirmed that Walt Disney was cremated 2 days after his death, not frozen. The first case of cryonic preservation occurred a full year after his death. But that did not rule out the possibility of a pseudo-Disney, and the opportunity for a doppelganger to be frozen alive in suspended animation, not death. A study in 2006 on genetical engineering appeared to offer lower body heat as a way to live as much as 20% longer. We have identified that a small but continuous reduction of temperature can have a beneficial effect in lifespan and aging, said the study's lead author, Bruno Conti, a biologist at Scripps Research Institute in La Jolla. "It is equivalent to 7 or 8 years of human life, so it is not bad." Prior to the current study, critical questions about the relation between calorie restriction, core body temperature, and lifespan remained unanswered. Was calorie restriction itself responsible for longer lifespan, with reduced body temperature simply a consequence? Or was the reduction of core body temperature a key contributor to the beneficial effects of calorie restriction? Conti and colleagues wanted to find out. Jiarui Chong, Lower Body Heat May Boost Longevity, Los Angeles Times, November 4, 2006. Conti and colleagues decided to focus their efforts on the preoptic area of the hypothalamus, a structure in the brain that acts as the body's thermostat and is crucial to temperature regulation. Just as holding something warm near the thermostat in a room can fool it into thinking that the entire room is hotter so that the air conditioning turns on, the Scripps research team reasoned that they could reset the brain's thermostat by producing heat nearby. Lindley Hall and Mika Ono, reduced body temperature extends lifespan in study from the Scripps Research Institute, News and Views, November 6, 2006. As far back as August 1916, Jacques Loeb and J.H. Northrop described their 1908 longevity research in Is There a Temperature Coefficient for the Duration of Life? According to John Mann, in 1917 researchers at the Rockefeller Institute lengthened the lives of fruit flies by maintaining their environmental temperature at 6 degrees Celsius 42.8 degrees Fahrenheit below normal. In 1986, John Halazy of Washington University immersed his lab rats in shallow, cool water for 4 hours each day. They burned so many extra calories that they ate half again as much as control rats, but weighed less. The cold rats lived 10% longer, on average. Josh Middledorf, Cold Temperature and Lifespan, It's Not About the Rate of Living, February 25, 2013. One of the chief researchers at Michigan State, Dr. Barnett Rosenberg, said that human life extension to 200 years could be achievable if similar techniques would be applied to humans. Doctors Richard Weindrush and Roy Walford also studied body temperature and longevity. It is not surprising that these two key researchers into aging have also applied their minds to an understanding of the implications of altered body temperatures. In 1979, they were the first to report a major decrease in internal body temperature in mice kept on a dietary, calorie, restriction program which led to an increased lifespan. Those mice which were long-lived showed between 1.2 and 2.5 degrees Celsius lower core temperature than did the shorter-lived, fully fed mice. Walford has found that application of hypothermia to animals in the second half of their lives is the most effective method of achieving good results, and he is quoted by Mann as having said that if the normal human body temperature of 37 degrees Celsius 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, which allows a lifespan of around 100 years, could be dropped to 35 degrees Celsius 95 degrees Fahrenheit, human lifespan could be extended to 150 years, while a drop to 33 degrees Celsius 91.4 degrees Fahrenheit would allow us to live to 180 years. 31 degree C slash 88 degree F equals 270 years, dot. Leon Chato, Body Temperature and Life Extension, Healthy.net. Hydrogen sulfide, or H2S, the chemical compound that researchers at Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center successfully used to put mice into a state of reversible metabolic hibernation, has now been shown by doctors Mark Roth and Dana Miller to significantly increase lifespan and heat tolerance in the nematode worm, or C. elegans. Roth's hibernation research made headlines worldwide in April 2005 when he was the first to show that exposing mice to minute amounts of hydrogen sulfide could induce a state of reversible hibernation on demand, dramatically reducing their core body temperature, respiration, and need for oxygen. Roth envisions a future in which similar techniques could be used to buy time for critically ill patients who otherwise would face injury and death from insufficient blood and oxygen supply to organs and tissues. Could hydrogen sulfide hold the key to a long life? Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, December 3, 2007. Roth hypothesizes that H2S, a chemical normally produced in humans and animals, may help regulate body temperature and metabolic activity. Hydrogen sulfide is similar to oxygen at the molecular level because it binds at many of the same proteins. As a result, H2S competes for and interferes with the body's ability to use oxygen for energy production, a process within the cell's power-generating machinery called oxidative phosphorylation. The inhibition of this function, in turn, is what Roth and colleagues believe causes organisms such as mice to shut down metabolically and enter a hibernation-like state pending re-exposure to normal room air, after which they quickly regain normal function and metabolic activity with no long-term negative effects. Science Daily, December 5, 2007. In 2013, Sergio Prostic reported in sci-news.com, H2S has been gaining increasing attention as an important endogenous signaling molecule because of its significant effects on the cardiovascular and nervous systems. Researchers at the University of Michigan Life Sciences Institute have identified a genetic program that promotes longevity of roundworms in cold environments, and this genetic program also exists in warm-blooded animals, including humans. This raises the intriguing possibility that exposure to cold air or pharmacological stimulation of the cold-sensitive genetic program may promote longevity in mammals, said Sean Su, LSI faculty member and the Bernard W. Agranoff Collegiate Professor in the Life Sciences at the UM Medical School. Stay cool and live longer? Genetic program promotes longevity in cold environments, Science Daily, February 14, 2013. Whole body cryotherapy, WBC, a treatment which involves enclosing oneself in a controlled environment with temperatures of at least minus 230 degrees Fahrenheit for 3 minutes, originated in Japan in the 1970s to treat arthritis and other inflammatory conditions. Its apparent physiological, emotional, and beauty benefits have since made it popular among professional athletes, celebrities, and trend-loving wellness buffs. Sophie Word, W Magazine, August 5, 2017. On October 10, 2015, a 24-year-old beauty salon employee, Chelsea Patricia Ake Salvation, was found frozen to death inside a liquid nitrogen chamber she used for cryotherapy treatment at Las Vegas. Authorities said she suffocated in the chamber chilled by liquid nitrogen. The treatment, an extreme version of an ice bath that exposes the body to nitrogen gas at sub-zero temperatures, was said to assist muscle regeneration and improve skin tone. In the U.S., salons offering the treatment sprang up in at least 30 cities, with a 3-minute session in a cryotherapy chamber advertised for between $40 and $100. Harriet Alexander, Las Vegas spa worker found frozen to death inside cryotherapy tank, The Telegraph, October 27, 2015. An incident occurred at the foot of Lycabettus Hill involving an unauthorized intrusion into an expired target assembly. A bunker, named Vechmel, was not cleared of toxic evidence. An intelligence SS officer assigned to the waste removal had perjured himself and falsified the cleanup documents. The sealed target assembly remained intact for over 30 years. But in 1980 its security buffer was breached. Dark clouds gathered on the horizon. The protectors could not afford to stand by and look the other way. A weakening of their grip would signal a loss of control over the southern fortification. A solution was required to prevent further setbacks. The firstborn of the Illuminati, conceived by donor insemination, was now a centenarian among the world's longest-lived people. He was preserved in a state of suspended animation for the slowing of life processes. But now his protectors were forced to resuscitate him. He would be let loose from his confinement for a little season. This would be his last performance. The beast that wiped out millions would awaken to trigger the resurgence of dark forces and despicable ideologies and the coming of the flatworm satanas. He was a bad other. He was a dirty other. The other fakir. The Damascus silo accident of 1980 nearly caused a thermonuclear Armageddon. Mick Jagger's first feature film, Performance, 1970, was a cult hit directed by Donald Camel and Nicholas Roeg, influenced by the Argentinian writer Jorge Luis Borges. Chaz, James Fox, is a London mobster on the run who turns up at the hippie house of androgynous Turner, Jagger, a former rock star who has lost his demon. Chaz settles into his basement lodging and partakes in the magic mushroom fests that Turner provides. After Turner brings to mind the old wizard of Mount Alamut, and his assassins of Persia, the camera follows a bullet's path through his head. By way of psychological morphing, Turner becomes Chaz double in a Rolls-Royce at the end of the movie. As to my study of Islam, I got a sheikh to teach me Arabic and the practices of ablution, prayer, and so on, so that at some future time I might pass for a Muslim among themselves. I had it in my mind to repeat Burton's journey to Mecca sooner or later. I learned a number of chapters of the Quran by heart. I never went to Mecca, it seemed rather vieux, but my ability to fraternize fully with Mohammedans has proved of infinite use in many ways. My sheikh was profoundly versed in the mysticism and magic of Islam, and discovering that I was an initiate, had no hesitation in providing me with books and manuscripts on the Arabic Kabbalah. These formed the basis of my comparative studies. I was able to fit them in with similar doctrines and other religions. The correlation is given in my 777 Confessions of Aleister Crowley. On November 4, 1979, Iranian students seized the American embassy in Tehran, in response to the exiled Shah's September 1979 admission to the United States for medical treatment. Of the approximately 90 people inside the embassy, 52 remained in captivity until the end of the crisis 444 days later. The Iran hostage crisis had its origins in a series of events that took place nearly a half century before it began. The source of tension between Iran and the U.S. stemmed from an increasingly intense conflict over oil. British and American corporations had controlled the bulk of Iran's petroleum reserves almost since their discovery, a profitable arrangement that they had no desire to change. However, in 1951, Iran's newly elected prime minister, a European-educated nationalist named Mohammad Mossadegh, announced a plan to nationalize the country's oil industry. In response to these policies, the American CIA and the British Intelligence Service devised a secret plan to overthrow Mossadegh and replace him with a leader who would be more receptive to Western interests. Iran Hostage Crisis, History.com. Through this coup, codenamed Operation TP Ajax, Mossadegh was deposed and a new government was installed in August 1953. The new leader was a member of Iran's royal family named Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi. In return for assuring the U.S. a steady supply of oil, the Shah received economic and military aid from 8 American presidents. The Shah began to close down the opium industry that had been created during the days of British influence. He allowed women the right to vote. He brought an end to the wearing of the veil, and ended the old feudal system. The overthrow of Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi of Iran by an Islamic revolutionary government in 1979 led to an abysmal decline in Iran-US relations. President Jimmy Carter applied economic pressure by restricting oil imports from Iran. By 1980, the Ayatollah Khomeini became the mainstream media mouthpiece against the U.S., which Khomeini called the Great Satan, and gave notice Iran must guard against conspiracies and plots. One theory claimed that a stand-in agent actor played the part of the Ayatollah Khomeini. Early in the 1960s, the Shah announced social and economic reforms but refused to grant broad political freedom. Iranian nationalists condemned his U.S.-supported regime and his westernizing of Iran. During rioting in 1963, the Shah cracked down, suppressing his opposition. Among those arrested and exiled was a popular religious nationalist and bitter foe of the United States, the Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. Between 1963 and 1979, the Shah spent billions of oil dollars on military weapons. The real price of military strength was the loss of popular support. Unable to sustain economic progress and unwilling to expand democratic freedoms, the Shah's regime collapsed in revolution. On January 16, 1979, the Shah fled Iran, never to return. The exiled Ayatollah Khomeini returned to Tehran in February 1979 and whipped popular discontent into rabid anti-Americanism. When the Shah came to America for cancer treatment in October, the Ayatollah incited Iranian militants to attack the U.S. On November 4, the American embassy in Tehran was overrun and its employees taken captive. The hostage crisis had begun. The hostage crisis in Iran, Jimmy Carter Presidential Library and Museum, November 6, 2012. The death of the Shah in Egypt in 1980 and the invasion of Iran by Iraq made Tehran more open to settling the hostage dilemma. On April 25, 1980, 8 U.S. servicemen were killed when a helicopter and a transport plane collided during a failed attempt to rescue the hostages. The Republican candidate, former California Governor Ronald Reagan, took advantage of Carter's difficulties. Rumors even circulated that Reagan's campaign staff negotiated with the Iranians to be sure that the hostages would not be released before the election, an event that would surely have given Carter a crucial boost. Reagan himself always denied these allegations. On election day, 1 year and 2 days after the hostage crisis began, Reagan defeated Carter in a landslide. Iran hostage crisis, history.com. The Satanic versus controversy, also known as the Rushdie affair, was the heated and frequently violent reaction of some Muslims to the publication of Salman Rushdie's novel The Satanic Verses, which was first published in the United Kingdom in 1988. Many Muslims accused Rushdie of blasphemy or unbelief, and in 1989 Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini of Iran issued a fatwa ordering Muslims to kill Rushdie. Numerous killings, attempted killings, and bombings resulted from Muslim anger over the novel. The Iranian government backed the fatwa against Rushdie until 1998, when Iranian President Mohammad Khatami said it no longer supported the killing of Rushdie. Nevertheless, Iranian state media renewed the fatwa in February 2016. Wikipedia.org. Condemnation of Rushdie's daring book began with its title. The title refers to a legend of the Prophet Muhammad, when a few verses were supposedly spoken by him as part of the Quran, and then withdrawn on the grounds that the devil had sent them to deceive Muhammad into thinking they came from God. These satanic verses were not found in the authorized Quran, but came out in other descriptions of the Prophet Muhammad's life. They permitted prayer to three pre-Islamic Meccan goddesses, Al-Lat, Uwa, and Mana, a violation of monotheism. Isis was a goddess of ancient Egypt. Rumor mill news suggested the double who played Howard Hughes in his last days also played the part of Khomeini. According to an article by Alan Peters posted in Jacques Fresco's Venus Project Foundation and in Indie Media, IMC, UK, the Ayatollah Khomeini and all of his cleric followers were a British operation. To sum it up, the article said, Khomeini was the son of a British cabin boy who ended up in the Middle East and India and married 7 wives and had 13 kids. Alan Peters, the clerics lash back as Iranians question their legitimacy. Khomeini's real father, William Richard Williamson, was born in Bristol, England, in 1872 of British parents and lineage. This detail is based on first-hand evidence from a former Iranian employee of the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, later British Petroleum, BP, who worked with and met the key players of this saga. This fact was supported by the lack of a denial in 1979 by Colonel Archie Chisholm, a BP political officer and former editor at the Financial Times, when interviewed on the subject at his home in County Cork, Ireland, by a British newspaper. The then 78-year-old Chisholm stated, "I knew Haji as Williamson was later known well, he worked for me. He certainly went native, but whether he is Khomeini's father I could not say." Raylan, could Ayatollah Khomeini have been a British op from the get-go? This article says he was British and Indian, Rumor Mill News, June 20, 2009. According to Alan Peters' article, Ruhollah Khomeini's undisputed brother, Haji Ali Williamson, used the Williamson family name. Other sources said that Khomeini's father was murdered. The father of Ruhollah Khomeini, Syed Mustafa, had his religious education in Esfahan, Samarra, and Najaf. In March 1903, Ruhollah's father was murdered by friends of a man who was sentenced to death by Syed Mustafa, when Ruhollah was just 5 months old. Khomeini needed an ID card, though he was loath to obey any of the Shah's rules and would have avoided doing so had there been the slightest opportunity. but without an identity card he risked becoming a non-person so far as the expanding and increasingly interfering administration was concerned. He also needed an identity card so that he could register the birth of his son Mustafa. Eventually, he registered himself as Ruhollah Mustafavi, a name he has continued to use in all official papers. Mustafavi simply means related to Mustafa. In the case of Ruhollah, this had a double meaning. It meant that Ruhollah was the son of Mustafa, but also that the family claimed ancestry from the Prophet, one of whose titles was Mustafa. By the end of 1932 he was already signing his letters in an entirely different name, Musavi al-Khomeini. In this, he continued a long-established tradition under which men of mission had two or more names. Musavi al-Khomeini was a nom de plume that was to become a nom de guerre. Amir Tahiri. The Spirit of Allah, 1985. Dr. John Coleman, a former British intelligence agent, stated in his report on Iran's Islamic Revolution that the Muslim Brotherhood was created by the great names of British Middle East intelligence, T.E. Lawrence, E.G. Brown, Arnold Toynbee, St. John Philby and Bertrand Russell, and that their mission was to keep the Middle East backward so that its natural resource, oil, could continue to be looted. In his report, Dr. Coleman wrote that in Iran, at one time there was even a joke about the mullahs being stamped made in Britain. When the Shah introduced his plan for modernization in 1963, the Ayatollah Khomeini emerged as the leader of the religious opposition. Up until his exile from Iran in 1964, Khomeini was based at the religious city of Qom. Dr. Coleman relates that Radio Free Iran claimed that while at Qom, Khomeini received a monthly stipend from the British, and he is in constant contact with his masters, the British. Peter D. Goodgame, The Globalists and the Islamists, Fomenting the Clash of Civilizations for a New World Order, Red Moon Rising, August 11, 2002. Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini died on June 3, 1989. Some conspiracy theorists said the shame at his burial was no accident, but that an inert lookalike was switched with the body of the real Ayatollah Khomeini so that he could receive a proper Muslim funeral. John Kipner wrote in the New York Times that the body of the Ayatollah, wrapped in a white burial shroud, fell out of the flimsy wooden coffin, and in a mad scene people in the crowd reached to touch the shroud. A frail white leg was uncovered. The shroud was torn to pieces for relics and Khomeini's son Ahmed was knocked from his feet. Men jumped into the grave. At one point, the guards lost hold of the body. Firing in the air, the soldiers drove the crowd back, retrieved the body and brought it to the helicopter, but mourners clung onto the landing gear before they could be shaken off. The body was taken back to North Tehran to go through the ritual of preparation a second time. James Buchan, Ayatollah Khomeini's Funeral, New Statesman, March 12, 2009. The Los Angeles Times reported, women clad in head-to-toe black chadors rubbed shoulders with men despite the Islamic prohibition of physical contact between a woman and any man other than her husband. To cover up the humiliating funeral of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, the Iranian authorities tried to confiscate every roll of film taken in a crowd estimated at 2 million. By the end of the ceremony, 8 people had died, more than 440 people had been hospitalized and an additional 10,800 had been treated for injuries. Ad-Dajjal is a personification of evil in Islamic eschatology. He is to appear pretending to be the Messiah. The Prophet Muhammad is reported to have said that Ad-Dajjal is a man with curly hair and blind in one eye. His eye looked like a protruding out grape. Abu Hamza was a leading figure in the British Islamist scene. The former nightclub bouncer who married a British woman lost his hands and an eye in a bomb accident in Pakistan in 1993. He spent much of his time preaching while producing leaflets calling for jihad against Middle East regimes. According to Hamza himself, MI5 first contacted him in 1997. He plotted to set up a violent jihad training camp. Abu Hamza was convicted in 2006 of using his sermons to incite murder and race hate. In 2015, a court in New York sentenced him to life in prison. Some commentators have suggested that the same political forces that created the Nazi ideology also formed a modern jihadist dogma based on a theory that the white Persian or Aryan race, which originated near Iran, is the bona fide Muslim outgrowth. Since they saw Islam as the fastest growing religion, they wanted to have power over it by creating their own CIA/MI5 controlled version. Adam Yahya Gatton was an American senior operative, cultural interpreter, spokesman, and media advisor for the Al-Qaeda terrorist group. Since 2004, he appeared in numerous videos produced by Al-Qaeda as Azam the American. His real name was eventually uncovered to be Adam Perlman. His paternal grandfather, Carl Perlman, was on the board of directors of the Anti-Defamation League. The Perlman surname comes from Ashkenazi German lineage. Like Judaism, mitochondrial DNA is passed along the maternal line. The female line of Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry resembles that of Western Europe, rather than the ancient Near East, as scholars proposed in the past. Given that Adam Perlman rejected Judaism, his European genes seemingly revisited him in the role of a fixated Germanish or Aryan jihadist. The FBI detained a Mossad surveillance team, the five dancing Israelis, on September 11. As said by a doubtful rumor in Iranian media reports, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the leader of Ruthless ISIS, aka ISIL, was an agent actor named Simon Elliott. Intelligence analysts called it a hoax, see page 472. Colleen Renee LaRose, also known as Jihad Jane and Fatima LaRose, was an American citizen who was convicted in 2014 and sentenced to 10 years for terrorism-related crimes, including conspiracy to commit murder and providing material support to terrorists. British Muslim convert Samantha Luthwaite was dubbed the White Widow because she was the widow of 7/7 suicide bomber Jermaine Lindsay. Luthwaite was an alleged member of the Somali radical Islamic militant group Al-Shabaab and one of the world's most wanted terrorism suspects. Her father was a former British Army soldier. The White Widow was a fugitive from justice in Kenya, where she was wanted on charges of possession of explosives and conspiracy to commit a felony. In 2017, the CIA killed a punk rock singer jihadist from Britain named Sally Jones, also dubbed White Widow. A Forbes article in 2009 asked, "Was Khomeini's father a Brit?" Stock experts treated the British Queen as a relative of the Prophet Muhammad. Did the globalist highborn and aristocratic Germanish bloodlines oversee their own adaptation of Islam, to keep the Middle East backward so that its natural resource, oil, could continue to be looted? The people of Iran didn't want an Islamic constitution, they just wanted to end the regime of the Shah. But Khomeini had other plans for Iran Islamic government by Wali'ullah al-Faqih, ruled by a Marja Islamic cleric. In 1988, he issued a fatwa to kill every Iranian political prisoner who would not repent and show to be a real Muslim, which would lead to the execution of many of them, numbers vary from 1400 to 30,000 murdered. The influence of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini as a Shiite religious leader and his writings can be seen today in Islamic terror organizations like Hezbollah, Lebanon, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Gaza, and the Taliban, Afghanistan. Ayatollah Khomeini favored Islamic martyrdom, even suicide bombing, and global jihad against all unbelievers. Kirthi Plethi, The Legacy of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini and Today's Global Islam, CRETPLET.com, November 17, 2009. Persian fascinated me more than any other language had ever done, and I reveled in the ideas of the Sufis. The Confessions of Aleister Crowley. A man can have sex with animals such as sheep, cows, camels, and so on. However, he should kill the animal after he has his orgasm. He should not sell the meat to the people in his own village, however, selling the meat to the next door village should be fine. So they say from Khomeini's book, Tahrir al-Vaisali, 4th volume, Darul Elm, Qom, Iran, 1990. Note, this is a disputed excerpt by followers of Khomeini. Whiskey bottles, and brand new cars. Oak tree, you're in my way. There's too much coke and too much smoke. Look what's going on inside you. Oh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell? Oh, that smell. The smell of death surrounds you. Lynyrd Skynyrd, That Smell, 1977. Sabbatai Zevi, born in Smyrna in 1626, was a rabbi and Kabbalist who claimed to be the longed-for biblical Messiah. He was the founder of the so-called Sabbatan movement. At the age of 40, he was forced by the Ottoman Sultan Mehmed IV to convert to Islam. His supporters infiltrated Islam and penetrated as far as Saudi Arabia. Jewish historian Gershom Scholem wrote, "The apostasy produced a profound shock, paralyzing leaders and followers alike." Benjamin Fulford, who worked as the former East-West editor for Forbes magazine and contributed to David Wilcox's Divine Cosmos website, claimed that the New World Order banker's plan was invented by a Sabbatan lobby group. In a surprise 2016 report, the Rockefeller Family Fund said it was divesting from fossil fuels.